Chapter 32. Landmarks. He will soon be far away, and may never see them again, he thinks. Poor youth. Poor youth. As dusk draws on, he paces the monk's vineyard. He has walked to and fro, full half an hour by the cathedral chimes, and it is closed in dark, before he becomes quite aware of a woman crouching on the ground near a wicket gate in a corner. The gate commands a cross-by path, little used in the gloaming, and the figure must have been there all the time, though he has but gradually and lately made it out. He strikes into that path, and walks up to the wicket. By the light of a lamp near it, he sees that the woman is of a haggard appearance, and that her weazen chin is resting on her hands, and that her eyes are staring with an unwinking, blind sort of steadfastness before her. All was kindly, but moved to be unusually kind this evening, and having bestowed kind words on most of the children and aged people he has met, he at once bends down and speaks to this woman. Are you ill? No, dearie, she answers, without looking at him, and with no departure from her strange blind stare. Are you blind? No, dearie. Are you lost, homeless, faint? What is the matter, that you stay here in the cold so long, without moving? By slow and stiff efforts, she appears to contract her vision until it can rest upon him, and then a curious film passes over her, and she begins to shake. He straightens himself, recoils a step, and looks down at her in a dread amazement, for he seems to know her. Good heaven! He thinks, next moment. Like Jack that night. As he looks down at her, she looks up at him, and whimpers. My lungs is weakly. My lungs is dreadful bad. Poor me, poor me, my cough is rattling dry. And coughs in confirmation horribly. Where do you come from? Come from London, dearie. Her cough still rending her. Where are you going to? Back to London, dearie. I came here, looking for a needle in a haystack, and I ain't found it. Looky, dearie, give me 3 and 6 pence, and don't you be afeard for me. I'll get back to London then, and trouble no one. I'm in a business. Ah, me. It's slack, and times is very bad, but I can make a shift to live by it. Do you eat opium? Smokes it. She replies with difficulty, still racked by her cough. Give me 3 and 6 pence, and I'll lay it out well, and get back. If you don't give me 3 and 6 pence, don't give me a brass farden. And if you do give me 3 and 6 pence, dearie, I'll tell you something. He counts the money from his pocket, and puts it in her hand. She instantly clutches it tight, and rises to her feet with a croaking laugh of satisfaction. Bless ye. Harkee, dear gem. What's your christen name? Edwin. Edwin. She repeats, trailing off into a drowsy repetition of the word, and then asks suddenly, is the short of that name Eddie? It is sometimes called so, he replies, with the color starting to his face. Don't sweethearts call it so? She asks, pondering. How should I know? Haven't you a sweetheart, upon your soul? None. She is moving away, with another blessy, and thankee, dearie. When he adds, you were to tell me something, you may as well do so. So I was. Well then. Whisper. You be thankful, that your name ain't Ned. He looks at her quite steadily, as he asks. Why? Because it's a bad name to have just now. How a bad name? A threatened name. A dangerous name. apostrophe, the proverb says that threatened men live long, apostrophe, he tells her, lightly. Then not so threatened is he, wherever he may be while I am a talking to you, dear, he should live to all eternity. Apostrophe, apostrophe, replies the woman. She has leaned forward, to say it in his ear, with her forefinger shaking before his eyes, and now huddles herself together, and with another bless ye, and thank ye. Apostrophe, apostrophe, goes away in the direction of the traveler's lodging house. This is not an inspiriting close to a dull day. Alone, in a sequestered place, surrounded by vestiges of old time and decay, it rather has a tendency to call a shudder into being. He makes for the better lighted streets, and resolves as he walks on to say nothing of this tonight, but to mention it to Jack, who alone calls him Ned, as an odd coincidence. Tomorrow, of course, only as a coincidence, and not as anything better worth remembering. Still, it holds to him, as many things much better worth remembering never did. He has another mile or so, to linger out before the dinner hour, and, when he walks over the bridge, and by the river, the woman's words are in the rising wind, in the angry sky, in the troubled water, in the flickering lights. There is some solemn echo of them even in the cathedral chime, which strikes a sudden surprise to his heart as he turns in under the archway of the gatehouse. And so he goes up the postern stair. John Jasper passes a more agreeable and cheerful day than either of his guests. Having no music lessons to give in the holiday season, his time is his own, but for the cathedral services. He is early among the shopkeepers, ordering little table luxuries that his nephew likes. His nephew will not be with him long, he tells his provision dealers, and so must be petted and made much of. While out on his hospitable preparations, he looks in on Mr. Sapsia, and mentions that dear Ned, and that inflammable young spark of Mr. Crisparkles, are to dine at the gatehouse today, and make up their difference. Mr. Sapsia is by no means friendly towards the inflammable young spark. He says that his complexion is un-English. Apostrophe, and when Mr. Sapsia has once declared anything to be un-English, he considers that thing everlastingly sunk in the bottomless pit. John Jasper is truly sorry to hear Mr. Sapsia speak thus, for he knows right well that Mr. Sapsia never speaks without a meaning, and that he has a subtle trick of being right. Mr. Sapsia, by a very remarkable coincidence, is of exactly that opinion. Mr. Jasper is in beautiful voice this day. In the pathetic supplication to have his heart inclined to keep this law, he quite astonishes his fellows by his melodious power. He has never sung difficult music with such skill and harmony as in this day's anthem. His nervous temperament is occasionally prone to take difficult music a little too quickly. Today, his time is perfect. These results are probably attained through a grand composure of the spirits. The mere mechanism of his throat is a little tender, for he wears, both with his singing robe and with his ordinary dress, a large black scarf of strong close-woven silk, slung loosely round his neck. But his composure is so noticeable that Mr. Crisparkle speaks of it as they come out from Vespers. I must thank you, Jasper, for the pleasure with which I have heard you today. Beautiful. Delightful. You could not have so outdone yourself, I hope, without being wonderfully well. Apostrophe, I am wonderfully well. Apostrophe, nothing unequal, apostrophe, says the minor canon, with a smooth motion of his hand. Nothing unsteady, nothing forced, nothing avoided. All thoroughly done in a masterly manner, with perfect self-command. Apostrophe, thank you. I hope so, if it is not too much to say. Apostrophe, one would think, Jasper, you had been trying a new medicine for that occasional indisposition of yours. Apostrophe, no, really? That's well observed. For I have. Apostrophe, then stick to it, my good fellow, apostrophe, says Mr. Crisparkle, clapping him on the shoulder with friendly encouragement, stick to it. Apostrophe, I will. apostrophe, I congratulate you, apostrophe Mr. Crisparkle pursues, as they come out of the cathedral, on all accounts. Apostrophe, thank you again. I will walk round to the corner with you, if you don't object. I have plenty of time before my company come, and I want to say a word to you, which I think you will not be displeased to hear. Apostrophe, what is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, we were speaking, the other evening, of my black humors. Apostrophe, Mr. Crisparkle's face falls, and he shakes his head deploringly. I said, you know, that I should make you an antidote to those black humors, and you said you hoped I would consign them to the flames. Apostrophe, and I still hope so, Jasper. Apostrophe, with the best reason in the world. I mean to burn this year's diary at the year's end. Apostrophe, because you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Crisparkle brightens greatly as he thus begins. You anticipate me. Because I feel that I have been out of sorts, gloomy, bilious, brain oppressed, whatever it may be. You said I had been exaggerative. So I have. Apostrophe, Mr. Crisparkle's brightened face brightens still more. I couldn't see it then, because I was out of sorts, but I am in a healthier state now, and I acknowledge it with genuine pleasure. I made a great deal of a very little, that's the fact. Apostrophe, it does me good, apostrophe cries Mr. Crisparkle, to hear you say it. Apostrophe, a man leading a monotonous life, apostrophe Jasper proceeds, and getting his nerves, or his stomach, out of order, dwells upon an idea until it loses its proportions. That was my case with the idea in question. So I shall burn the evidence of my case, when the book is full, and begin the next volume with a clearer vision. Apostrophe, this is better, apostrophe says Mr. Crisparkle, stopping at the steps of his own door to shake hands, than I could have hoped. Apostrophe, why, naturally, apostrophe returns Jasper. You had but little reason to hope that I should become more like yourself. You are always training yourself to be, mind and body, as clear as crystal, and you always are, and never change. Whereas I am a muddy, solitary, moping weed. However, I have got over that mope. Shall I wait, while you ask, if Mr. Neville has left for my place? If not, he and I may walk round together. Apostrophe, I think, apostrophe says Mr. Crisparkle, opening the entrance door with his key, that he left some time ago. At least I know he left, and I think he has not come back. But I linger. You won't come in? Apostrophe, my company wait, apostrophe said Jasper, with a smile. The minor canon disappears, and in a few moments returns. As he thought, Mr. Neville has not come back. Indeed, as he remembers now, Mr. Neville said he would probably go straight to the gatehouse. Bad manners in a host. Apostrophe, apostrophe says Jasper. My company will be there before me. What will you bet that I don't find my company embracing? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I will better I would, if ever I did bet, apostrophe returns Mr. Crisparkle, that your company will have a gay entertainer this evening. Apostrophe, Jasper nods, and laughs good night. He retraces his steps to the cathedral door, and turns down past it to the gatehouse. He sings, in a low voice, and with delicate expression, as he walks along. It still seems as if a false note were not within his power tonight, and as if nothing could hurry or retard him. Arriving thus under the arched entrance of his dwelling, he pauses for an instant in the shelter, to pull off that great black scarf, and bang it in a loop upon his arm. For that brief time, his face is knitted and stern. But it immediately clears, as he resumes his singing, and his way. And so he goes up the postern stair. The red light burns steadily all the evening in the lighthouse on the margin of the tide of busy life. Softened sounds and hum of traffic pass it, and flow on irregularly into the lonely precincts. But very little else goes by, save violent rushes of wind. It comes on to blow a boisterous gale. The precincts are never particularly well lighted, but the strong blasts of wind blowing out many of the lamps, in some instances shattering the frames too, and bringing the glass rattling to the ground. They are unusually dark tonight. The darkness is augmented and confused by flying dust from the earth, dry twigs from the trees, and great ragged fragments from the rooks' nests up in the tower. The trees themselves so toss and creak, as this tangible part of the darkness madly whirls about, that they seem in peril of being torn out of the earth. While ever and again a crack, and a rushing fall, denote that some large branch has yielded to the storm. Not such power of wind has blown for many a winter night. Chimneys topple in the streets, and people hold to posts and corners, and to Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.